Welcome to the Issue Is Podcast Extra. I'm Alex Michelson, and I'm very excited to have with us this week Jessica Yellen. Welcome.
Hi.
Jessica, a lot of people will know, is the former CNN chief White House correspondent, was one of the main positions in the entire political journalism world. She's now left the crazy, horrible world of cable news, and she is now a real person. She's written a new book called Savage News. She also does something really cool online, which is focused on news, not noise. If you follow her on social media, she breaks down the big stories of the day in understandable language that's actually centrist, which you don't see a lot of these days. And so we want to talk about the book and talk a little bit about her story as well. Good to have you here.
So nice to be here. Thank you for having me on.
And you're one of the smartest people in the business. I got to give a shout out to our pal, Brian Goldsmith, who's our frequent contributor on The Issue Is, who said, you got to talk to Jessica Yellen. She's one of the best. And we're so glad to now have you part of our family as well.
Thank you. And thank you, Brian.
Okay, so let's talk about Savage News for somebody who hasn't read it yet, the real basic premise of the book.
So it's a satire. It's a novel, like a made-up story. People trip over that because they think, why would a journalist write a novel? About a young woman who's always wanted to cover the White House, and she gets the opportunity just as the First Lady disappears. And her management sets her up in a competition with another reporter to get the White House job. Her main rival is now a journalist but made his name in reality TV, and whoever gets the highest ratings wins.
So where did that, in your mind, where did that story come from?
We used to joke that sometimes we'd feel like we were being set up in a what we'd call a bake-off, where it wasn't a formal competition, but you can kind of sense that management's pitting you against another reporter for a job or for a story. And I really wanted to tell a story that takes people, viewers, behind the scenes of what it's like to be the reporter on the beat, trying to get the story, and operate in a world that's sort of very funny and also very challenging.
What do you mean by a bake-off? Give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, in this story, in the novel, for example, our main character is called Natalie Savage, hence the title. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment when she gets a scoop. Like, she figures something out, and she takes it to her management, and she's like, I got this. Can you get me on air? And, you know, you need to tell the boss what you have so you can get on camera. So they put her in front of the camera, and they sit her down. And as she's about to go live with her scoop, her rival pops up on camera and reports her information. So the boss gave it to the rival to report. When people read this book, early drafts, my friends and editors, they're like, oh, you should take that out. That's over the top. And I told my reporter friends this, and they started doubling over laughing. They're like, this happened to me today. Like, this happens all the time. And so a lot of the craziness that happens in the news business is unbelievable to people outside the business.
So who took your scoop? Wolf Blitzer?
Nothing. No, no. Wolf is a lovely
Jake
human.
Jake Tapper? Who was it?
Lovely human. But that kind of thing does happen.
Yeah. And it was Don Lemon, right?
I'm also a Don Lemon fan.
No, just kidding. That's so funny. I mean, the process for you, after writing so much nonfiction, although sometimes the White House feels like fiction.
Yes.
What's that process for you of actually going and writing a novel?
It was so hard. You know, when you write a TV story, they're about a minute 30 to a minute 45 spoken. And so when I sat down to write this novel, I'd start to write each story, and it came to it was the length. If spoken, it would be 1 minute 30. And that's not how you write a novel, right? So it took me – I had to figure out the craft of novel writing. And, you know, I realized the beauty of a deadline, because we complain in the business that, you know, there's no time to tell a whole story. You get an assignment at 8. It has to be a.m. You have to be on air with it by 4 p.m. There's a beauty to that, too, because after it's on, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And with this novel, it, like, sits inside you as a obligation forever until you get it all right.
Yeah, I always think about that, working in this business, that there is a sense of completion every day.
Right.
I heard, interestingly, Hillary Clinton one time said that one of her favorite things to do is to clean up her house. because every day when you're on a campaign, it's such a big process and you can't get anything done. It's so big that she liked literally like folding clothes. Like then there was a beginning, middle, and end.
And an accomplishment.
And
yes.
A sense of accomplishment at the end of the day.
That's so interesting.
So now you're on tour.
Yeah.
And this is your first time on a book tour.
It's so weird.
What does that feel? And what does it feel like also as, because as a journalist, you're really not supposed to be the star, even though some would criticize that's what cable news has become. But you're really supposed to, somebody else is supposed to be the star of the story. You're telling the story. But now, in part, you are the star in selling this book, even though it's about your characters. What has that been like, being on the other side, being interviewed now?
That's an excellent question. It is very weird. My first few interviews were hard for me because I'm so used to asking the questions. In answering them, I'd like play out in my head all the 8 ways my answer could be misinterpreted. You know, you just think about how are they going to edit that? I know too much in a way. So it's a weird experience, and I am one of those people who thinks the news is the star, not the reporter. On the other hand, I really wanted the story to get out because there's two things about the story that I want the world to know, and so I care enough to go through this awkwardness. And one is a little bit about reporting while female, some of the unique challenges women have in the workplace and in news in particular. My whole growing up, I would read novels about women, quote, finding their voice. Mm. And it's always in a relationship. And you'd read novels about work, but it involved male leads mostly. And so women are working now. And so why aren't we having more stories about what are the challenges for women in that space? And then I wanted to tell a story about, you know, the challenges of reporting in an environment where people don't always respect or even believe the work that journalists do and how hard you work to break through that. And I will say that reporting wins in the end in this book.
Talk a little bit about reporting while female, because it's interesting now. All of the network news heads are all women for the first time. Maybe not all the heads, but I think all the executive producers of all the morning shows are now women, and there's a lot of female management in a way that there wasn't before. Do you think that that's changing what it's like to work as a woman in the industry?
I think it's great that we're seeing this progress. There is social science research that shows you need 30%. When you have 30% of the executive ranks are women, it changes the dynamic for everybody because women no longer feel like they're the one or two at the top and they have to play along. When there's 30%, they feel more comfortable speaking up for each other, getting each other's backs, and changing policy. So I don't know that we're at that critical mass. You know, everybody says 50-50, and that's ideal. But we can start with 30, and I don't think we're there yet. I will say, though, there's been like changes recently. You know, when I started writing the book in 2014, I had what I'm calling light Me Too in it. Mm-hmm. There is a reporter in the book who would give massages to the White House press secretary's assistants while he's talking to them. And early readers told me to take that out. They said that was not plausible and no one wants to hear it. Mm. And it took me forever to write the book. So 3 years go by and it's 2017. The Harvey Weinstein thing happens. And all those people call me up and they're like, put it back in. Put it back in.
Yeah.
So I do have some what I call light Me Too now throughout the book.
And you think of all the legends in TV news who have no longer in their jobs from
right.
The time that you started to now. So let's talk about how you got started in your job. Where did the passion for journalism come from? Talk a little bit about your upbringing.
Well, I grew up not far from here in Los Angeles. My family was very involved in the civic life of L.A. My dad was what I call a benevolent real estate developer. He rescued buildings in downtown L.A. and restored them, including the Bradbury Building and Grand Central Market. And I grew up believing do well, do good. It wasn't enough to just crush it professionally. You had to make a contribution. Out of college, I worked in the Clinton White House as an intern, and I observed that – I thought I'd be in politics – but I observed in the White House that there were two things that could stop the room cold. One was the president himself walking into the room. And the other was that one TV that was in the corner of every single office in the White House, one of those big tube TVs, no plasmas in those days. And it was tuned to the only 24-hour cable news channel that existed at that time, CNN. And whenever those reporters were talking about the White House, everyone went dead silent, looked up, and listened.
Wow.
And it would inform how they made their decisions for the rest of the day on policy and on message, et cetera. And I often thought, why are they covering that silly scandal instead of this very important policy issue everyone should be talking about? And I thought if I were doing that, I'd do it differently. And so I set out to be a White House correspondent.
And then you became a White House correspondent.
I mean,
do you think you accomplished that goal?
No. I mean, in retrospect, it was excruciating getting there. It's very challenging, but also rewarding, right? It's like, and I found that there were times I could really do reporting that I thought was important and meaningful, and there were a lot of frustrations as well. And things have changed to the point, at least when I left, where I wasn't doing the kind of reporting I wanted to do anymore. And so I needed to make a change for a lot of reasons.
So you sat down with three presidents?
I mean, in various ways, I've interviewed, I think, three presidents and all the first ladies and treasury secretaries, et cetera. Yeah.
So the three presidents were what? Clinton, Obama, Bush?
Yeah.
So I think it'd be a little bit behind the scenes of each of those and what those men were like and what that whole experience is like interviewing a president. Let's start with President Clinton.
Well, President Clinton is a person whose energy comes out at you. You know, he's one of these people who immediately connects and is incredibly warm and engaging. And you just feel kind of enormously in his presence. I don't know how else to say it. And, you know, when you're talking to a president, I had a tense exchange with him on the campaign trail at one point. But my observation of his is he's, you know, enormously smart and articulate, and you can't get past this sense of him connecting to you. George W. Bush has this incredible emotional intelligence. He's much different from Clinton in that you feel like you're just with the normal, like a regular person. You can almost forget that he's president. Mm. That's his secret skill, right? He makes you so, he's such your buddy that you kind of can let down your own guard. Mm. And he has real emotional intelligence, which he sometimes deploys to charm the person in the room or sometimes to make them ill at ease. And I remember when I first got to the White House under the Bush presidency, I was like this brand new reporter, nervous. He called in all the new White House correspondents and had us in the Oval Office. There were like eight of us. And he had us stand in front of his desk while he paced the office talking for like an hour. And I remember it became very anxiety inducing after a while where you're just standing there waiting to figure out what's going to happen. And I think that's kind of, you know, I don't know what kind of power play it was, but there was something, right?
Did he give you an interview at the end of that, or that was just his way of?
It was an off the record. He was just giving us, like, letting us ask our questions and letting us get to know him. It was smart, very smart.
President Obama.
Obama is the most centered, still person you'll ever encounter. I think when you're around him, he has this. Unlike Clinton, whose energy is all coming out at you, President Obama is very self-contained, and but you feel very calm in his presence. And there's a just a stillness to him that's quite remarkable. I did an interview with him for a documentary around the election. And I remember I was so, you know, you wake up the night before, you get the interview and you're like, tomorrow's the day I'm interviewing the president. And you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, in 8 hours, I will be interviewing the president. And that morning, you're like, this is the morning. You know, you go through that. Once it starts, you're so in. You're just like locked and loaded, and it's not hard from that point on. It's the anticipation that's hard.
And did you ever interview President Trump before?
No, I've not interviewed Trump. I'll tell you what I would do if I interviewed Trump. I would pick one topic and ask endless follow-ups on only that topic. That's when you get news. That's when he reveals himself. A third follow-up is where he opens up and you get the real.
Smart. Most people don't do that.
Well, it's risky because, you know, you want to get a soundbite on everything that's happening because then you can, like, have more news stories out of it. But it's not the best way to really dig in and find out what's – well, I was going to say what's true, but I don't even know what that means anymore.
An interesting thing that he does, it seems like almost all of his media availabilities are him standing so that way he can walk away.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he very, very rarely sits down for an interview. That way you're stuck. But if you're doing something out on the White House lawn and you hear a third follow-up, you can just leave.
Walk.
And don't have to answer it. Let's So talk about also what you're doing on Instagram, because I think it's really interesting and I think more people should pay attention to
it. Oh, you're so nice. Thank you. So when I was in the news, I observed that there's a part of the audience that doesn't like the way we were doing the news from Washington. And they don't like the screaming and they don't like all the jargon. And I had this idea that there's a way to do news differently in a different voice. And I'm doing it now on Instagram. You can follow me at Jessica Yellen, Y-E-L-L-I-N. I break down stories and then I do little video reports. The idea is to keep it short and to the point, but also smart and clear. And I call it news without a panic attack. Because so much of my career in Washington was sort of find the conflict. How do you amp it up? Bring me urgency, intensity. You want people to be almost triggered. It's like we're competing for people's anxiety. And when I was a baby reporter, it used to be my job. We'd like have a debate about the tax plan. But before, as the baby reporter, I would do a minute and 30 on what is in the tax plan. Too often that job doesn't exist anymore, the explaining part. So I just feel like people need an on-ramp to engage. They want to know, but they don't know how to enter, and they don't want to be triggered.
So what? And a follow-up to that is, what is cable news really like? What's it like actually being there and making the sausage?
Part of it is exhilarating. I worked with enormously able reporters. I think that the people who are doing the daily work of journalism every day have intense integrity, are working like crazy, and I have real respect for them. They work inside a system that values conflict above all, because the idea is to get people's eyeballs and get people's energy and intensity. And forever, the theory has been the way you do that is by appealing to the most base instincts, which are fear, self-protection, panic, right? And all of that worked in an era when things were calm. But my theory is that right now everybody's already sort of triggered. We're already living at a higher level of anxiety and self-protection and panic. So adding on to that pushes some people over. And some people feel like, you know what, I just can't engage. I can't. And they turn off the news.
Right. Just turn off altogether.
And so I'm trying to think, is there another way to bring them back in? And that's what I'm doing on the Instagram.
Are there days, like say the Mueller report comes out, that you miss it?
Yes, sure. I mean, there's the thing that I miss is the camaraderie, the conversation with other reporters, the engagement, all the interesting people come in the building, right? And they're so – and on those days, they're so good, and they have such able minds there. But I don't – like yesterday, I did the Mueller report on Insta, and one of the things I did is I said, here's the basic. I'm putting it out right now. I'm not rushing to tell you the rest. I'm going to digest it first. And – for me, that was both a discipline, like it was hard because I kept thinking, oh, I should post every little thing I know as I figure it out. But it was also really satisfying and I think right to make sense of it first before I go out there and tell people what's in it.
Yeah, I felt for a lot of those cable newsers, like I saw Pete Williams, who's one of the smartest guys in the business who I interned with.
Really?
Trying to,
oh, he's amazing.
He was literally out of breath. I mean, he said, I'm out of breath,
yeah.
Trying to read it for the first time on the air and explain it to people. And it's like, maybe we all just should take a moment and look at it. But it's that's the way that it is.
It's also a weird, it's like a business model where you have to rush. And the idea is like, actually viewers, it doesn't change your life as a viewer if you find out what's in the Mueller report at 11:01 or at 11:15 or at 4 p.m. that day.
Right. Well, congratulations on everything that you're doing. Again, the book is called Savage News. Her Instagram is at Jessica Yellen, Y-E-L-L-I-N. You can also listen to Jessica as part of our Issue Is TV show this week, which is also in podcast form, which you can stream as well. We look forward to having her back. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. It's really a treat to be here.
And thanks for listening to this special podcast from The Issue Is. We encourage you to subscribe. We encourage you to check out other podcasts. Some of our recent conversations include Stuttering John Melendez and Coulter. Both of those really interesting, both of them with very different perspectives. You'll follow me in social media as well at Alex Michelson. And you can watch our shows on Fox 11 at in Los Angeles, Friday nights at 10:30, Saturday mornings on KTVU in San Francisco at 6:30 a.m., and at youtube.com/AlexMichelson and at foxla.com. That's enough plugs for now. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening.